Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Psychic Medium Sherry. The show is about to begin. Well, good evening, everyone, and thanks for taking the time once again on a Sunday to tune into another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I am Jason Ophir, as always, joined by the beautiful and talented psychic medium Sherry. Hey, Sherry, how's it going?
Hey, pretty good, Jason. How are you?
Not too bad. Just went for a power walk, and I'm ready to have a great show tonight. And you lined us up some great guests this evening.
Yeah, wonderful. Hey, I'm gonna intercept really quickly because I promised I want to do a little bit of advertising, and the person that I'm going to be doing some advertising is just a beautiful soul, but I will be there next Saturday. It's the Higher Healing Fair. It's going to be in Eugene, and I don't know if people know where Eugene is, but Eugene is a very, very open, and especially with the paranormal and the metaphysical. I'm going to be doing Chinese medicine. People who don't know, I'm a medical medium for the last 20 years, medical Qigong practitioner. I'm in the fourth branch in Chinese medicine. So I'm going to be doing that and also psychic and mediumship readings. And I'm going to be at the Higher Healing Fair, which is going to be over on 1645 High Street in Eugene. So I will be there between 10 and 5. So you want to go and to get a reading, do some Chinese medicine, get a treatment, let me know. Just get a hold of me on my website or on my Facebook, or just show up and you can see me in person. So I'll be there 10 to 5, and if you want a reading or Chinese medicine, I'll be there. So I thought I'd go and, do a little bit of advertising for the people. They're wonderful.
Absolutely. If I wasn't so busy, I wouldn't mind driving down there. I need a road trip. Sounds like a good time.
You should. It's probably going to be a three-and-a-half-hour drive, but I'm going to have to go and definitely go and work out the day before, so I'm going to be sitting on my butt all day. But anyway, let's talk about our guest. We have a wonderful guest this evening.
Yeah, why don't you kick out some bios?
I want to introduce Ross Allison and his partner, Chad. So I don't know his last name, pardon me, Chad, but I don't remember what your last name is, but I do want to get a formal introduction. Should we bring him on the show?
Yeah, let's get it going.
Okay.
How's it going?
Hey, Ross and Chad, how's it going?
Hello.
Guys?
Good.
Sorry about the intro with the last name, Chad. Chad Goodwin, that's right. Would you please introduce yourself just a little bit, and then we can talk about other things.
I'll let Chad go first. So, I'm Chad Goodwin. I am a scientist and engineer inventor. I've done a lot of my work in energy storage and nanomaterials for energy storage. And a couple years ago, Ross gets a hold of me and talks to me a little bit about, using some of the scientific method to prove out some of the things that he's been working on. And, I got really, at first I was a little like, I don't know, but then I got really excited. And now we're out there and we're getting our documentary out and it's really exciting.
Yeah. So,
awesome.
So yeah, I've been in the paranormal field for close to 30 years. I started the oldest ghost hunting group in the Pacific Northwest. I've had the opportunity to be on all the television shows that everybody's seen out there. And I basically, what happened is I wanted to pursue the the challenge of trying to prove touch. And it all came to me when a client of mine had told me that he had been touched in an old brothel. And I was kind of fascinated with this because this is not the first time I had ever heard these types of encounters. But there was also this situation where I was also limited on, you know, when people came to me with these stories on what I could do for them. You know, when they say that they've been touched in different ways by what they claim to be a spirit, it's such a personal thing. And I just was wanting to see if I could take it further. It was like, can I prove touch in any way? And that just, you know, just got me thinking, and I came up with all these unique experiments in trying to validate these encounters. But the problem was, is I was still limited on the data I was getting to prove these encounters. And so I had met Chad because he had had me on his radio show. He actually did a community science talk show, and he was fascinated with the paranormal, so they called me in to talk about the paranormal. And as I got to know Chad, I realized, you know, there was more to Chad than just, you know, talking science. He actually, you know, seemed to be this gifted engineer, and he had all these ideas as we started, you know, bopping around in both of our heads about the paranormal and trying to prove it. And so after remembering my conversations with him, I just kind of said, you know, hey, Chad, I'm kind of doing this research, and I'd like to know, how would you prove touch? And it just kind of took off from there for both of us, really. You know, me taking somebody who wasn't really sure about ghosts and putting him in the field of paranormal research. And then, you know, him to open my eyes more into a scientific field and show me that all these ideas that I had in my head, he could make them happen. And we just meshed so well together, and we put our minds together, and we updated a system that I had put together known as Spectre. He saw more potential in it and made it now Spectre 2.0. We took it out into the field of investigating the paranormal and trying to prove, and we had nothing but amazing experiences and collected amazing evidence, and we're now ready to show the world.
So I got to add real quick my own personal touch story, which happened recently. One of my closest friends had passed away recently, and I play a lot of virtual reality, and I'm sitting here, you know, I got the goggles on. I can't see anything going on, and somebody taps me on the top of my head. I thought it was my girlfriend. I turn around, nobody's there. It was just weird. I don't know if it was him or what, but that was the only time, and I've been in the paranormal since 2005 formally, that I feel like I may have been touched. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that.
Wow. No, that's great. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Chad. I think you were trying to say something.
Oh, I was just saying, I was just thinking, Ross, that was a pretty good introduction for both of us there.
Well, you know, our inside joke between me and Chad is, you know, we complete each other. It's just he's been an awesome addition to this. He's been an awesome, you know, not even to me and the research. I really believe he's going to be an awesome addition to the paranormal field because he really helped, you know, even with me, I was so limited on what I was able to accomplish with my research. And now he made that happen. You know, he was able to take this information that I was able to give him and make something amazing out of it. And I'm just excited about it.
Yeah, I've been really, you know, one of the things I find so interesting about this, and as we got the equipment together and as we started to put it out into the field, you know, I think one of the things that we really need to start looking at more and more, you know, in this field is,
these things that we captured and that you see are only happening in like fractions of seconds, like some of them less than a half of a second. And so when you think about how you go about doing something like that, you know, you got to have, we have to clear spaces. We have to baseline the space to make sure that there's no data that comes up on any of the instruments that are like part of an every, you know, a cycle of things that are happening in the space. And then when you get the equipment in and you're running it, you know, to see that things happen in fractions of seconds make it really hard to, you know, believe that you can take. So here's how I see it. I see it as Ross and I are using the empirical evidence that people have about touch and about feeling. And the only way that you can attack that from a scientific perspective is to try to collect data that suggests that the empirical evidence of somebody lines up in a way that makes sense, right? And so that's basically what we're doing.
So this technology is, so it detects if somebody says they're touched, you're able to analyze data that substantiates the fact that they were touched. Is that how it works?
We're able to prove that something odd is happening in the environment at the exact same moment people are being touched. Something is happening around the subject at that moment. And what's really cool is we're able to track the phenomena. For the first time, we can track this phenomena. We actually have shown on two separate occasions during our research that two separate subjects, Chad being one of them, where they were both scratched, there was a pattern to the activity when that happened. And I'll let Chad explain a little bit more.
So we're running, so the different types of sensors that we're running, you know, we're looking at sonic movement. So, you know, it's sending out a sound wave, and if it hits something that is dense or solid, it can send it back, and it sends it back, and it gives us that distance. But like when you back up your car and your beep, you know, your sensor goes off to let you know something's behind you. We're collecting
kind of like
that
sonar.
Data. It sends out a tick, and it listens for the return. Right, of that that audio wave puts out, and that distance is actually by the speed that it returns at. And then, you know, we're also using passive radiation, PIR sensors. So that's looking for any kind of a moving or source of radiation, passive radiation. It's looking for that from other objects. And what we're finding out is, or what we found out, is that when people get touched in this scenario, we were able to see that there was something that came at the sonic sensor, and we were also able to see that the PIR shows that there was a passive radiation coming from whatever that was. And so when you line that up and then you see people getting touched, and everything's being recorded in real time on the data, so it has the exact all the way down to milliseconds when that, you know, data point is, and we can line that up with the video, and everything's collected with time stamped. So then we can, when we line all this stuff up, we can validate by lining up all those time stamps and data and visuals that something, you know, we have a strong suggestion something happened.
And then that corresponds with somebody feeling like they get touched. Is that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's what
I mean, that's
the exact same moment. Right?
I mean, that's actually amazing. If you have multiple data points at the same time, somebody's having a physical experience. I don't know how much better information you can get than that and evidence.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's still young, and it's, you know, we're still learning. We definitely feel, even though I've been doing this now for 6 years, we do feel that there's still more that we can add to this and expand the research. And that's where we're getting ready when we film the second one. But the fact of the matter is, you know, even for those two situations where Chad got scratched and our other subject, Nick, he got scratched, to see that exact pattern happen, it just shows that there is something there. We can, you know, show that there is an anomaly we can't explain that ties in two exact the same experiences. And in this field, that's what you kind of have to look for. You have to look for those patterns. And the sad part is no one throughout history has ever done this before. You know, no one's ever taken it this far. And so we even had to go and down to California. We met with Lloyd Auerbach, and we, you know, to validate our research and get it out there and show, you know, that here we are, we're doing something very unique. Even, you know, Lloyd said, this is amazing what you guys are doing. And, you know, show him the spectral system and how it worked, and then, you know, take him out and have him witness the spectral system working as well. You know, we did everything we could to, you know, basically get ready for this and show the world that this is a new way of ghost hunting. You know, we're breaking the mold here.
It definitely sounds revolutionary. What do you think, Sherry?
That's amazing. I would love to get, I'd like to see you guys explore more of it, and I'm dying to see the documentary.
Yeah, the documentary comes out March 25th. It's going to be at the Times Theater in Seaside, Oregon. It's at 10:30, so if anybody is local to the area, wants to come down, it's also the same weekend that we're doing this as the opening for the Oregon Ghost Conference. So you'll be able to do more ghosty things if you're going to come down for that weekend. So there's a lot going on, and it's we're really excited for everybody to see the documentary.
Is that something that down the road would be able to be, like, rented on Amazon or anything like that?
We are working on getting on Amazon, but right now you can stream it after the 25th. On the 26th, it will be available on Scare Network, and that's scarenetwork.tv.
Cool. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Absolutely. Wow. So how long did it take for you to, how long is the documentary? You know, is it an hour, hour and a half? How long is it?
It is going to be just a little over an hour.
Nice. And how long did it take for you to shoot it?
That's the longer story. So, like I said, I've been doing this research for going on 6 years. And basically, as a researcher, obviously you want to publish your research. And so as I started to find that as I did these experiments, there was something happening. But like I said, it was still very limited. And I'm always trying to at least open people's minds to the idea that there's something out there. And I feel by applying some sort of scientific method to your research, you can begin to open people's minds. And after, I would say, I think it was on my third year, because me and Chad, we're going on 3 years now, right, Chad?
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
So, so after the third year, that's when I reached out to Chad. And he started to, you know, follow me around on these experiments as well. So in all honesty, it is 6 years of research. Now, when I first started doing the experiments, I wasn't filming this in a way to do a documentary. I was just filming the experiments. And so as we got closer and closer to publishing the research, one of the things that had happened is I got the documentary in my mind as I started having all this evidence and putting it together. I reached out to Wesley Uhr, if anybody is a fan of Land of the Lost. He actually played Will on Land of the Lost, the old 70s version.
Oh, I love that
and,
show.
He's been a good friend of mine, and so I knew he had done some directing and producing, so I had reached out to him and told him what I was doing. And that's when he told me, he's like, Ross, oh my God, this is a TV show. And so we toyed around with that idea. We went back and forth with networks, and it just didn't pan out to what we wanted. And so, in fact, they really wanted to push sexual hauntings. And they wanted, you know, to go the whole sexual route. Because one of the things that we haven't mentioned is the documentary series is called Parasense, The Naked Experiments. If you're going to try and prove touch, obviously you'd want the body to be exposed. And so we do take naked people into haunted locations and try to see what happens to them. So with that element, since I'd always been using naked subjects, they wanted to push the sexual aspect of it. And we really wanted to kind of, since we fought to get it back, we decided, you know, we want to do it our way and really kind of put the sexual aspect to the side. And that's when we came up with Parasense and started doing the research. And so Wesley's been with me for about 3 years now, too. And we basically put it together ourselves and got it out there.
That's awesome. Have you guys personally have, each and every one of you, have had personal experiences with the other side of being touched?
Oh, I'll let Chad take this one.
Yeah. So the way we do the research, I was pretty surprised. So when Ross, you know, first talked to me about this, and he said that everybody would be unclothed for the experience, I was just like, wow, this seems pretty extreme, right? But then once he explained to me, it's the best way to allow the skin to fully be exposed and you to be exposed so that you're heightened, right, in your senses. You know, and it started to make sense to me. Like I said before, the only way we can do this is take this people's empirical evidence, their experiences, and match it with data. And so it was pretty amazing when I got in there almost right away, and when we went to Cook's Tavern on the first part of the doctor, that I could start, like, your body is different in that space when it's dark and it's you alone and you're listening. You can feel your skin more. I mean, it gets really intense. And then to have this happen at the prison where I am, I was provoking a response. It was really my fault, if I got to say anything. And to be scratched, it was weird because you could hear that something happened. I could hear it. My first response was because I heard something, like, snap on my neck, and then, you know, you look and there's nothing there. And the person that was in the room with me, she was working on her computer just in front of me, and she said she heard it. You hear on the documentary, she said, I heard it. And when she comes over and looks, you know, she almost right away, she could see a scratch on my neck. And it was just, it was, I don't even know, it was jarring, and it was one of those things I wasn't expecting to have happen. And, but, you know, it helps. All of these experiences, and the reason why I jumped in to do these experiments as well is because if I don't know what we're looking for, then I don't really know how to target my experiments to look for them, right, and the equipment that we're going to make in the future. And so that was part of the thing is coming along on this ride isn't just the fact that I get to sit back and make cool gadgets and do this. I have to be part of the research, and I have to get into the middle of it. And so that experience, it shook me up. I mean, the whole course of the documentary, you know, when you're filming stuff like this, it isn't so much that the filming part of it took it out on me in the hours that we were working, which was enormous amounts of hours to do it. But it was after the fact when I realized what had happened and I had the scratch and I had these experiences and all this happened, it emotionally got to me and broke me down. For a few days, you know, I was calling Ross and talking to him about, like, was that real? Is that what, you know, you've seen, experienced, because it was so shocking. And because I like so many facets of science, this is one of those things that just now has completely drawn me in. I totally want to know what this is.
Absolutely. Wow. What do you think, Jason?
So it's not like wearing underwear. I mean, you're all like fully naked doing that?
Fully naked.
Wow.
Because the reason for this, you know, the reason why, you know, I chose to do it this way is because you don't want to limit whatever, because some of these encounters have been sexual, I'll be honest. In fact, what inspired this was, like I said, that young man that was working in a brothel, something groped him. And so when you're dealing with a situation, especially when you're doing experiments in a brothel, obviously there's going to be a sexual nature to it. And so I didn't want to limit my subjects in that situation. Plus, you know, if a ghost is going to touch you, you never know where a ghost might want to touch you. So we have to make everything, you know, available. And also, too, you know, when I've been touched in the past doing investigations, you know, I've always been wearing clothes. And me being a paranormal investigator, I always second-guess my experience. I'm always, well, maybe that was my jacket. Maybe, you know, it was just my shirt adjusting. Maybe that was a muscle twitch. I don't know. And so you really have to remove the clothing because that just contaminates the experience. And you really do have to see what is happening to the body, to the skin, to the muscles. We don't have that information. We are the first in history to collect that data and get it out to the public. So when people have these experiences, we have more information to give them and to understand more about these experiences. That's what's shocking to me is that we're the first to do this.
I was going to say, I mean, it makes perfect sense because, like you said, with the clothes, I mean, something shift and you're like, oh, wait, did something just touch me? So I get it. Yeah, I mean, that takes guts to just go somewhere naked. I'm just saying.
It does. I was surprised when Chad decided to do it. My jaw just dropped. Yeah. Like, I was like, I'm going to give it a try. I'm like, what? So
yeah,
he definitely has
like...
balls, and I've seen them.
Yeah, the sensors we have in there that shows up our data set inside the documentary. But one of them is lux, how much light intensity is in the room. And when you look at the light intensity, you see it's 0, 1, 4 max. So there's no light in these spaces. There's just enough, like, distancing sometimes, you know, if there's, like, at the prison, there was exit lights in the distance. But for the most part, you're sitting in complete darkness, all of this going on around you. And, you know, even the slightest creak of a building when you're naked and it's dark is completely jarring to your body. You're just like jerking around in the dark, like looking like, what was that? You know, like it gets to you. It's a different feeling for sure.
Yeah, you're totally vulnerable. Do either of you
exactly.
have any theories regarding the composition of ghosts and how they're able to manipulate our physical world? Anything like that?
You know what? No. You know, I mean, I think what we've done is just barely scratched the surface. I mean, if we could take all of the, you know, people's experiences over time and find a way to, you know, unify that with some data and say it was likely this or it was likely that based on data, then we could start to figure it out. But what we've collected so far gives a strong suggestion that we're on a path. And we have a lot more experience or a lot more experiments. And in the, you know, the next documentary going on or whatever we end up doing, we are going to be looking at just so many things, sensor arrays, you know, I don't know. I mean, we could throw in all kinds of stuff and start to figure it out. And once we collect enough data, I think we can start to go back and say there's certain things that would cause these array of sensors to go off in this manner. And I think that's when we start finding it. But right now, this is very exploratory, I think. And, you know, one of the things Ross and I have been talking about is it would be really great if we could get some of the other ghost hunter teams that are out and around in the world and start working to try to figure out where people are having these really tense experiences and then go to those sites and run our experiments on them to see if we can correlate that data.
Wow, that's just really cool, being able to make, you know, some sense out of it for people, especially people who don't believe in it or let alone may be open to it but never had experience it. You know, that's really cool.
And what's, I think, really cool, too, when you watch the documentaries, I was able to take the data, and because we have data that suggests movement and suggests these things happening, right, we are able to create animations in those timestamps that we can and, you know, a large 3D model that's scaled out inside there, how fast that movement was actually happening. So
if it's just a linear movement of time or if it's large jumps and then like short jumps, you know, that would suggest quicker and slower movement. So with just the data we have now, we can already start to understand how fast this thing could move, you know, whatever this phenomena is. But what's really more interesting, I think, is inside the prison when we're running those things, there was people that had other experiences that the equipment didn't pick up. So that's what I'm saying. It makes it really hard with just this set of experiments that we did to try to already, you know, try to guess or project what we think is going on there. We just know something happened, and sometimes we got data and sometimes we didn't. So that means we have to find what that missing data is.
Right.
Do you ever worry about things following you home? Like, or have you ever had any issues with that? Like, we've talked to a lot of people that say some entities have followed them home, another house is haunted. Do you have any experience with that sort of thing?
Yeah, I do. we were, yeah, it's just part, you know, it's just when you have it, and you want to talk about it, it's the weirdest response that you have to it. So here, I'll tell the story. Everybody, we were doing some experiments in D block at Brushy Mountain Prison, and I decided to take it on myself to provoke a response for the first time. This was before I provoked and ended up getting scratched. And so I'm sitting in D block by myself, and everybody's out doing stuff at home HQ, and I'm just trying to listen to the space and understand what's happening. Like I said, I have to immerse myself in these spaces to try to figure this out, right? And so I started talking, and there was something that happened where there was like a moment where all of a sudden I knew something wasn't right in my body. Like I didn't feel, I felt like my blood pressure was rising. I felt like I was starting to get headaches, and I almost felt like I didn't fit inside my body completely anymore. And we had a little bit of filming left to do that night, and I made it through it. And we had somebody with us, Shanna, who brought a really cool piece of equipment that Ross will have to tell you about. And she does Reiki, and she's really connected. She's really amazing. And I told her that night, I said, something happened, something's wrong. And she says, okay, well, you know, like just kind of relax and, you know, let's get through the night, go to sleep. And when you wake up in the morning, we'll talk. And it was really weird because I had murder dreams that night. I was having these dreams where, I mean, the most vivid one was I was standing in a courtyard looking at a bunch of people, and I caught eyes with somebody, and this is graphic, but I pulled a gun out and shot him. And I saw that happen, and I woke up from that experience, you know, and I just had these weird dreams. And so in the morning when I woke up, I walked out and I looked at Shanna, and she's like, oh yeah, there's something wrong. You don't look so good. And the person, one of the other people that came in, Patrick, he said that he was having some weird dreams too, that he had me in those dreams. And so Shanna was like, look, let's get back to the prison. We have things going on this morning because we were in a bit of a rush because we were working late the night before. And we got back to the prison, and when we came around the corner and I saw the prison again, it felt like the screws of this thing were just being tightened on me, and it got worse and worse, and it just felt terrible. And we got in there, we did a little bit of the filming, and I finally went to Shanna, and I was like, that's it, we got to do something about this, because she told me she could help me out. I was like, you got to do something about this. So we sat up in a room, and I don't know what she did. I just laid there with my eyes closed, but there was a moment where I felt it actually release and go away. And the thing that got me about it, and the thing that I still don't understand about it was, is how I went from feeling good, terrible, and then when it happened and it whatever she did, it disappeared, and I was back out and filming again like nothing happened. And I don't really understand that, but that was an experience that I'm really – I don't like it. I still don't like it, but I'm really happy I had it because I feel like that gives me just one more thing to try to think about, to try to find, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's crazy.
I wasn't familiar with Brushy Mountain Prison, so I just Googled it. It looks pretty ominous. It's like nestled between some hills, and it's been around a long time. A lot of violent murderers, robbers, for over 100 years. That's creepy ass place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I had been there once before doing some experiments as well. And that's really one of the reasons why I wanted to go back, because we had such a unique experience with Nick, one of our subjects, where he actually ran out of the prison stark naked from his experience in D Block. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go back, because we wanted to bring Nick back, and he wanted to, you know, he was basically going to confront his fears because he was terrified to go back to D Block. And it was just, it's a great place. It really is. And some of the experiences that everybody had there, you know, everybody seemed to walk away with some experiences there.
What's the significance of D Block? Were there any, like, were there a lot of murders there? I imagine there were throughout the prison, but is there anything special about D Block?
D Block is a solitary confinement for the most dangerous individuals were kept in D Block. So, yeah, they were pretty much kept there all the time. And just the worst of the worst, if you can imagine, was right there in those cells.
Losing their minds, no doubt. Solitary confinement.
Probably, yeah.
No joke.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Did you recover right away? I mean, after getting home, after the experiment, did you recover or did it take you a while? I've already been to a couple myself, paranormal investigations, and personally I don't go to them because I'm an empath and not only psychic and, you know, that kind of thing, but I it takes me about a week to recover. I'm totally drained. How about you guys?
Me, I could do this all day, you know. I can,
wow,
you know,
really?
I think for me, my protection is, and you have to understand, you know, Chad was doing something completely different than how I investigate. I'm very respectful when I go into places, but, you know, even if it's a very negative entity on the premise, I will still be very respectful, go in, make my announcement of why I'm there, and then, you know, say my thank yous and goodbyes. Where Chad, you know, he was provoking. So right there, he was inviting something.
Yeah.
Chad's hardcore.
Yeah, it took me, you see in there, you know, some of the provoking stuff that I was doing, which, you know, so rough. Doesn't really suggest, and it's not, you know, one of the things I don't think is, you know, we should be doing, but I don't know. But yeah, it took me some time to recover from that. I was pretty skittish for a couple weeks after that. I was having a hard time sleeping after those dreams. So I would say it took me like a week or two probably to completely recover. It's just like I got back to my condo and I was laying in my bed like right after we returned. And I'm laying there in condo buildings, you know, there's other people, things are moving and happening. And it was like every time something moved, I was like, wake up, or I'd jerk, or I'd look around. So, yeah, but I'm gonna do it some more. I'm ready to go do more.
Well, Jason was thinking about having an investigation, right, Jason? Thinking about forming a team?
Yeah, I had a team for a lot of years, but I got out of the paranormal. I was doing lots of investigations, but primarily at people's houses. And then I just kind of realized, you know, I'm too much of a sissy. So then I just kind of backed out of it. But now there's something kind of drawing me back to getting back into it again. I have all the equipment. I just stepped away. You know, maybe it's because of this show and talking to people that have all these horrible stories about paranormal investigating. Maybe that's what scared me away.
Well, if you ever wanted to be in a subject, we got some more experiments to do.
That actually sounds like a lot of fun. You know, it'd take some courage to get butt naked in some haunted location, but you know what? I'd probably do it. You know what? Who cares?
I will.
It's It's been an amazing experience, you know, I have to say. It's been a challenge, for sure. Because, as I said, I was shocked to find that no one had ever done this research before. Because I looked. I searched and searched because I was looking for some inspiration. If somebody had done some experiments and trying to prove touch from a ghost, what did they do? You know, can I improve upon that? And I couldn't find anything. You know, if there are people out there, publish your research. That is so important. Don't just keep it to yourself, because then when you're gone, your research is gone. So, you know, to talk to Lloyd and then to find out, you know, gosh, you guys are the first to do this. In so many different ways, we're the first to do things. You know, the Spectre system is the first. And it's just, it's been, you know, eye-opening, and it's been an experience that I am so excited to be a part of. And, you know, to be a part of this history that we're making here, and being lucky enough to have somebody like Chad, who is, you know, very intelligent in helping us develop the equipment we need, but also open-minded enough, because I'm not saying there's other people out there that can't build the equipment. There sure enough is. But to have somebody in Chad's mindset willing to put his name on this and be out there and experience this stuff and say, hey, there is something to this. We don't know what it is quite yet, but there's something to this. And that's where, you know, as a paranormal community, we are gifted to have somebody like him.
Thank you, Ross.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow. That's great. Boy.
Definitely groundbreaking.
I remember one time when I was doing a reading, I went into an area which is very remote out here on the outside of, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Manning and Banks, Oregon. It was quite interesting because the family literally had an alligator as a pet. Had a room. It was situated where they had a in-ground pool and everything. Well, the house was originally a barn, and the little child was like 5 or 6 years old, and the child was scared. And I was called upon on that case. This happened probably about 5, 6 years ago. Called upon about the case, what the child was. You know, why was the child freaked out? Well, apparently, As I found out, there was a little boy walked in and kept on tugging on my coat, trying to get in my attention. And what I can see psychically, the kid was literally climbing on the wall, literally climbing. And so
wow.
I found out that with the history of the place, there was a little boy. They have a pond in that area, in the property. The little boy died in the pond and was still alive. I mean, he hasn't crossed over. And being that
right.
he was attached to the girl that lived on the premises, he latched onto her. And the parents thought she was crazy. Mom, I'm getting all these, you know, she's freaked out. She couldn't even sleep in her own house. I mean, in her own room. She was only 5, 6 years old. So anyway, came in and, you know, validated that there was a little boy that crossed over. And sure enough, they found out there was a little boy that drowned on the property. That happened 30 years prior.
Wow, that's awesome.
Great. So, yeah.
That sounds absolutely terrifying, Sherry. I'm just letting you know. I never want to see little children crawling on the walls or the ceilings, because I'd be like, I'm out. And that's not
that
cool.
That sounds like almost a horror movie, right?
Physically, but I was able to.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I turn that veil on, I can see all kinds of things when I have the discipline to turn it on and off. But, yeah, it was different. He was literally climbing on the walls. It was like, that's crazy. No, I wasn't scared. I knew it was a child. So, but, yeah, it happens. Things like that happen.
So my question is, and I've always been fascinated with people that can see these things, is, you know, when you watch it in movies, whenever a psychic sees a ghost, they always look like a zombie, you know, something horrid coming at you when it comes to seeing ghosts. Is that how you see them, or do you see them how they were in life?
I see them how they were in life.
Okay. So that wouldn't be as scary as some zombie, half-rotted creature, you know, coming
no.
at you. Or
No, they portray themselves, and this is my experience, they portray themselves and how they want to be portrayed. Whether they want it, if I do a mediumship reading and a person comes through, if they want to show that they're old, you know, they'll show, you know, bald hair, you know, in their attire in the era that they were brought up in. Or like my mom, for an example, you know, she's passed on. She wants to appear. She's going to appear that she's in her 40s, 50 years old, in probably the best prime of her life that she wants to show me who she looked like. Not that she, you know, when she was dying of cancer or something, but, you know, they change. They really do. They can impose themselves to however they want to, you know, like shape-shifting. They can go any way they want. So I've seen them with their, you know, it's interesting. Very, very interesting.
So I got to ask you guys your personal opinion on something that happened where I live. I want to see what you guys think. So I am in a new construction townhouse. Like, I literally bought it before it was even done being built. And was here for a year or so, and my girlfriend was in the, it's three stories, she was on the second story with the living room and the kitchen. And when you're in the kitchen, you can't see around the corner where there's stairwells that goes down to the first floor. So one of the cats is staring, she's looking out, but she can't see what the cat is staring at. But the cat's staring towards the bathroom and the stairs that go down, so she looks around the corner and sees a completely opaque, dark black mass, like from the waist up in a Superman pose. It then goes through the wall, which would be into the neighbor's unit. So my question is, what is up with black masses? Like, is that something to be concerned about? I mean, people always associate black with evil. I'm not convinced of that. I mean, it could be
I'm not either.
So, but
I think when you're seeing a dark mass, it doesn't have to do with evil. That this is based off of religious beliefs and started that whole belief system that, of course, if it's dark, it's evil. I believe it's another form of apparition. You know, when you get into the different stages of an apparition, the more energy you bring into it, the more light you bring into it. And, of course, when you add more light to it, that's when you can start to get different colors. And that's where you can actually identify color rather than just a dark mass, where it could be the very first stages of an apparition. I've always said that I believe that there is this this formula that, you know, in the beginning stages of a haunting, you can go into a room and you could probably feel a presence, like you feel like there's something watching you. And then you add more energy to that, and, of course, maybe now you'll start to see maybe light formation, flashes of light. Some people describe orbs, and I think that's very possible. And then you add more energy to that, and maybe that's when you start to get these dark, you know, formations, the beginning stages of an apparition. And then you add more energy to that, and then that's when you bring in light, and now you can start to see color, the color of their clothes, the color of their skin. And then you add more to that, and that could explain why some people experience solids, where they actually think it's a living person until they just vanish. So I think that could be the stages of an apparition or a haunting. But again, just theories, we need more data to validate that.
As long as it doesn't necessarily mean there's a demon roaming around my townhouse.
No.
Were
you
going to
say something, Chad?
No, I mean, I think you explained that pretty well. We did have this two thing I thought was interesting, and I'm kind of wondering if the absence of things like light and stuff could have to do with this. But we did have two pieces of data on one of the scratches where the sonic sensor sent out the sound wave, but it never returned. And so I'm wondering if there, you know, when you see data like that, and I just think, and then I hear, you know, dark masses, I wonder if there is a manifestation state where it's like that. That is the state of it. I'm not glued to the idea that this manifests in just one way, right? Because we don't, like I said, we have gaps. Sometimes we capture data, sometimes we didn't. So I wouldn't put it past the idea that that is one of the manifestation states, right?
And I think that makes sense. I mean, it makes more sense for something to gradually manifest from nothing to like a peak point versus just instantly appear at some way, you know.
Right.
To me, anyway.
There's some things that I've
As I said, you know, energy's got to come from somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I was saying, there's this one optic experiment I'm trying to put together, and you know, it'll allow a little bit of us to be able to kind of see the invisible world we can't see around people and around objects. And my theory in trying to develop this whole thing, or I guess my hypothesis, not my theory, is that if something's created and it's made to move or scratch, and now unless it's something that completely interacts just with the ion, you know, the ionic level right at the skin and it interacts with the skin, I feel like we should be able to see some kind of refractive index change is kind of what we're going after around whatever that object is, you know. So if something moves and energy manifests, it would have to displace and move air around it in some way. And that's, you know, that's the kind of level of stuff we have to get to. I mean, like, it's okay to be able to use sensors to do things, but we also have to figure out how to actually see something like this happen in some way. And so when we're thinking of experiments, you know, we're not just thinking of what we're doing now, but we're planning some really, really large experiments in the future.
That's exciting. I'm curious to see where the technology goes. That'd be great if you could invent something where you could directly or indirectly be able to, you know, on a screen or something, visualize the activity.
Right. Yeah. Here's one more thing that we noticed too was, so I was the first time I went out, like, and just kind of got into Ross's world, he took me to the Turn of Joy and showed me the ship, and we, you know, we did some stuff there, and that place seems like there's something going on there too. But he was playing some EVPs that they had captured there. And here's an interesting thing that I noticed. On the EVP, someone had a cell phone near the recording device. And so it makes a tick, 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 tick on the recording device, right? That's an electromagnetic interference interacting with the electronics directly, right?
Right.
But what was weird is, and I used to be an audio engineer in my past life, and when I heard the voice that talks on the EVP, now stretched apart from that, like you hear the ticks early in this recording and it's a little bit of time, and then toward the end of it you actually hear what the voice they captured was. And what caught me about that was, okay, so they didn't hear it in the room, and you hear the cell phone ticking in the thing, and almost the same tones as that ticking noise is what the voice kind of sounded like. Which was odd for me to think, you know, as an audience, you know, I think is it was the same interaction, like an electromagnetic, you know, interference pattern. So that's one of the things I really am most interested in chasing down is, what is an EVP exactly? And I'm trying to think of some ideas to make specific types of listening devices and antennas to hear those, those interference patterns.
See, that is one of the biggest problems that we have in this field, is the paranormal field is all over the place. And no one really, and don't get me wrong, I know there has been some research when it comes to EVP, but they don't really focus enough time and energy into just one phenomena. And I've always said, if we could just focus our attention on just one phenomena, like I have with touch for the past 6 years, if we can have a better understanding how that one phenomena happens, that becomes the root to all the other possible phenomena that we experience. And this could tie in, you know, Bigfoot, aliens, all that stuff, if we just had a better understanding of just one thing. But unfortunately, everybody in this field is just all over the place. You know, they dabble a little bit in EVP, and then they're done with it. They move on to something else. They dabble on to something else. And the problem we have in the paranormal field is you can't always you can't create it. You can't make it happen. So where normally if you're going to do an experiment, you know, you could do 10 experiments and have a better understanding of what you're dealing with. For us, we could do 10 experiments, but only 3 of them were active. So that means we have to do another, you know, 6 experiments, 7 experiments. So, and they have to all be active. Because with ghost hunting, it's all about being at the right place at the right time. And that is one of the biggest challenges we have in this field. Can't always, every time you run an experiment, that it's always going to be successful.
Exactly.
You just have to hope that you're at the right place at the right time.
Exactly.
So it takes
a
lot more time and energy for us to get the data we need.
Absolutely.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Well, it looks like we're we got a few minutes left, so we got to get this wrapping up. So now, where can people? I'm sure people are going to want to learn more about the documentary. Where can they do that? I mean, I know.
Like I said, we have our premiere March 25th at the Times Theater in Seaside, Oregon. So we'd always love to have people there in person. Me and Chad will be there answering questions. But then it also will be appearing on the Scare Network. You can check out the trailer on our website at touchedbyaghost.com. And the trailer is up there and ready to go. I just tested it. So check that out. If you want to learn more about me, you could always find any of my books at Amazon.com. I also do want to point out that me and Chad are working on a book together, Parascience, where we're going to be putting all of our research together into a book and teaching people how to be more scientific in their approach in the paranormal. So do watch for that. We'll hopefully get that out by the end of the year. And then also, too, I always encourage people to follow me on Facebook, Ross Allison Ghost Hunter. And I do a lot of live investigations from places I'm going to. I'll be going to Europe in a year and a half, in a week and a half, sorry, and be doing some filming out there. So there'll be some live investigations from that you'll be able to watch.
I'm going to ask you, Ross, are you available for any type of, you know, somebody has a case? Are you available? Are you taking certain cases? Or now, right now, you're suspending cases? How readily are you available as far as if somebody has a case and they might be interested in having you or hiring you to come out?
Well, I'm always open to cases. I would never turn anybody down if they're dealing with some serious phenomena. You can always reach out to my team, aghost.org, and that's the Advanced Ghost Hunters of Seattle Tacoma. You can always reach out to us for any possible investigations. I can't always guarantee that I would be directly involved, but I'll be involved in some way when it comes to the investigations that a ghost does. I don't personally always have the chance to do investigations because I, you know, got a lot of bit of projects going on here and there, but in some way I will be involved through a ghost.
That's great. And Chad, how can people get a hold of you if they need you?
I'm pretty easy. I've just started to get everything set up. So my main mode is you can find me on Instagram at the Parascientist.
Oh, Parascientist. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Wow, that's wonderful. Thank you, guys. We thank you for coming on and sharing your experiences and your new documentary. I'm excited to see it myself. I'll be there. And what about you, Jason? Is there anything else that you need to say or can contribute?
No, I love what you guys are doing. My background is like an investigator, and I currently work in pathology, so I'm all very sciencey, but I'm open to the paranormal, yet skeptical. So I love that you guys are using science involved with the investigations. I don't think enough people do that, because I think that's really how we're going to get more information and more evidence and be able to figure things out. So I applaud you guys for that. And thanks for taking the time to come on tonight. It's been fantastic. Thank you.
Anytime, you guys.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Wow, you guys are, thank you. We appreciate you. All right, Jason.
Thanks.
All righty. Well, as usual, it's about my dinner time, so I'm going to fix me up some food. And, yeah, absolutely fantastic guests. It's great that the work that they're doing. And, yeah, so great show, great guests. And do you have anything else, Jerry?
Nothing else. Yeah, you guys check me out next week. I'll be there if they want to see me. I get the higher healing fair. I'm not sure if we're going to be on next week, but the following week, I've got a three-day show. I'm going to be back on tour and then on stage. So, yeah, we're going to be gone for sure in 2 weeks from tonight because, like I said, I'm going to be on stage and on tour. But we'll check out next week, see what next week holds. But thank you, everybody, for following Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. We appreciate your support and your participation. Anybody wants to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me on Psychic Medium Sherry. It's Psychic Medium Sherry, spelled C-H-E-R-I. You can get a hold of me, psychicmediumsherry.com, or you can get a hold of me on Facebook, Psychic Medium Sherry. And Jason's my admin. Yay! Jason, thank you so much. It's been a long time since we've been together. It's been almost 6.5 years since I've been on radio, a lot longer with you. But I really appreciate you as a person. I love you. Thank you so much for being my other half on radio. I just want to say I appreciate you.
Yeah, I love you too. It's, I don't know how many episodes it's been. It's maybe 260, something like that.
I've lost count. I want to know. Years, so.
Yeah.
Hey guys, you know, excuse us if we're not on and consistent, but sometimes, you know, we have our life to live, and like I said, I'm on tour and Jason's got things to do, you know, so that's the only times we can't make it, but we'd be happy to serve you. Have any questions or anything you want to know, just get a hold of Jason, so like on Paranormal Horizons Facebook page.
That's it. We still got to get that page fired up. We were reaching over 1 million a week, and it's still, I don't know. I think we've been blacklisted on Facebook for the last 2 years or however long it's been.
I think it's just the algorithm. You know, it really is. It's the algorithm. But, you know, we need to talk about our other options. But, no, it's great. It's still continuing. And, you know, maybe we can go on live on a different platform just for on a Sunday if we just plan on not going on, you know, Blog Talk. But we can go on live and still maybe, you know, be able to crank out and let people know and maybe tune in into a different platform. Hey, I'm still, you know, it's not that I want to change. It's something adjunct to what we're doing. So that's what I'm open to. Anyway, I got to go eat, too. I mean, I worked out today. I'm going to go eat, too.
All right, we're both going to go eat. Hope everybody has a safe and fantastic week. And the show will be on live or recorded next Sunday, 7 p.m. West Coast time. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Love and peace. Take care of yourself. Be safe.